Carol is not going to be here. He couldn't make it for personal reason. And she sent her paper, and her paper is about Latin American or Hispanic outside of the United States. And the title is Identity Across the Americas. Is it possible to discern an American identity across the hemisphere in ways that transcend the policy realm? So I'm going to read the paper. I reduced some parts of the paper so we can have enough time, but I think that later is going to be published. In Hispanic American, liberalism acquired a meaning different from the meaning it received in the United States. Working from historian Frederick Jackson, Turner's frontier thesis, William B. Allen affirms that as it expanded, the Western frontier created the conditions for the emergence of an American love story with an individualistic, self-reliant, family-centered, and justice-driven liberty. On the frontier, the opportunity to forgive oneself through hard and unfettered work was partially the product of an absent government, on its beginning benign neglect. In contrast, Latin American-style liberalism never quite rid itself of European top-down mindset that awarded the state a leading role in constructing a cultural identity and defining social and economic institutions. The 19 countries that comprise Hispanic America share a common heritage, having been conquered and governed by Hispanic crown, starting with Christopher Columbus, arrival in 1492 and ending as late as 1898, when Cuba and Puerto Rico finally gained independence after the Spanish-American War. Its inhabitants speak Spanish and were, until modern times, predominantly Catholic, sometimes in lieu of and sometimes in coexistence with indigenous religious practices and languages. This essay focuses on Guatemala, known as the more extensive captaincy general of Guatemala during the colonial period, because it is the country I know best, generalizing from the Central American experience to Hispanic America as a whole goes against the grain of academic rigor because each country has a unique history. However, conveying each country's liberal journey is a huge task. This essay is a mere approximation to liberalism as a part of the identity of those Americans who inhabit the southern part of the continent. When feeling self-deprecating or frustrated with the state of affairs in our respective countries, Hispanic Americans sometimes blurt out, perhaps without truly meaning it, if only we had been conquered by Britain. This is the essential, the theme of the award-winning tome Empire of the Atlantic War, Britain and Spain, America, 1492-1830, published by Sir John Huxtable Eliot in 2006. Eliot is perhaps the most knowledgeable and quoted author of the history of the Hispanic Empire. He argues that different colonization processes yield different identities. Eliot contrasts two emblematic figures, Hernán Cortés and Christopher Newport. The Spanish conqueror was a government representative who achieved a transfer of imperial power from Montezuma to the Spanish crown in 1519. The British seaman was an employee of a private company. When he arrived in America in 1606, seeking adventure. Not only did Newport arrive almost a century later, he did not and could not represent centralized power in the way Cortés did. Whereas the colonization of Spanish America predates that of North America, They later declared its independence first. The United States Proclamation of Independence in 1776 and the French Revolution of 1789 influenced the independence movements in Hispanic America. As was the case in the British colonies, criollos, creoles, mestizos, and Indians resented paying higher taxes and tributes to Spain. The Bourbon reforms that came into effect during the 18th century were intended to modernize the Spanish economy. This meant a more efficient tax-collecting administration, a stripping of economic and political power of some religious orders. The Society of Jesus was suppressed in 1767, for example. A militarization of bureaucratic structures and a greater military presence in America. And the mercantilist restrictions of trade with the British colonies, especially in the vessels were not Spanish. These conditions spurred revolts such as the indigenous rebellion in Peru led by the upper class Indian José Gabriel Condorcanqui, who took the name of Tupac Amaru II. The fighting continued for a year after Tupac Amaru was captured, tortured, and beheaded in 1781, and the estimated death toll reached tens of thousands. Between 1808 and 1814, Spain fought its own war on independence against Napoleon, who crowned his older brother Joseph Napoleon Bonaparte, King of Spain. The unpopular king earned the nickname of Pepe Botella, and the reputation of being a drunk, also he was abstemious. King Joseph I of Spain and the Indies wanted to introduce republican reforms with the support of the Afrancesados, a group of illustrated Spaniards who admired all things French. Joseph tried to reach an agreement with the courts of Cadiz when they were constituted in 1812. But the following year, having suffered military defeats in Arapiles and Victoria, his brother Napoleon signed the Treaty of Valencia, in which he recognizes Ferdinand VII as King of Spain. Some of the recent historians provide for Spanish revolt against French rule include the desire to reestablish the most Catholic line of the throne and the reaction against new ideas. In the midst of the Civil War, the courts of Cadiz approved a democratic and liberal constitution that bore the same nickname as King Joseph, Pepe, La Pepa, because it was adopted on March 19, on St. Joseph's Feast Day. It is now recognized as the first truly Spanish constitution. The text was not the product of a consensus. Some people desired a temporary reform styled on England experience, while others, influenced by the doctrines of examples set by France, held that the reconstruction had to be more radical. Liberal concerns such as constitutionalism, freedom of the press, free trade, national sovereignty, and even universal male suffrage made their mark on this text. Due to the ongoing turmoil, it was never totally enforced. As Carlos Sabino concludes, the Cadiz Constitution is perhaps the clearest expression of Hispanic liberalism, as understood two centuries ago, while supported by a good part of the illustrated population, did not have the least possibility of becoming a practical political solution in those turbulent moments. Political unrest on the old war created a window of opportunity for independence in the new war. The Napoleonic invasion in Spain contributed to the criollo-led organization of juntas or boards to govern the colonies from the main cities, such as Peru, Quito, Caracas, Buenos Aires, Chile, Mexico, and Bogota. These juntas became key to independence movements. Also, they initially swore loyalty to the captive king, Ferdinand VII, and rejected Napoleonic rule. Sabino writes, the situation was in reality quite confusing. While a part of the kingdom and the colonies hopefully welcomed the actions of liberals who thought to create a constitutional monarchy for the first time in the country, a sort of war which changed from month to month was fought in the peninsula. Independence came to Hispanic America amidst debates and power struggles. Some Americans wanted to return to the status quo and reestablish Ferdinand's rule. Others wanted to embrace the reforms brought forth by the Court of Cadiz, while others pushed for absolute independence in the spirit of the United States experiment. In the New World, Sabino observes, the decrees of the court had a destabilizing effect because they attacked the church as well as the army and the landed elite, provoking a growing malaise that made many consider the possibility of independence. It wasn't until 1820 that republicanism became the favorite political doctrine among the liberators. José Cecilio del Valle's takes on liberalism was not unique. Also, it might confuse North American observers in the 21st century. The terms liberalism and conservatism have taken on a meaning very distant from that of the past. In the United States, but not so in Europe or Latin America, a modern liberal would elsewhere be labeled as progressive. As he or she tends to favor a welfare state, social entitlements, and the government oversight of individuals' lives. A modern-day conservative is suspicious of a powerful state and favors a smaller-sized government that enables individuals to freely conduct their lives, exercising personal responsibility. The tradition and order that US conservatives want to conserve, therefore, is liberal in the classic sense of the term. During the 19th century, in Hispanic America, conservatives preferred the status quo of segmented social and ethnic strata, imperial tradition, and absolutism. Liberals were more prone to admire the principles associated with the French Enlightenment that trusted in human reason to build a better world, a world devoid to the tyranny. Once independence had been achieved, the agendas evolved. Usually, conservatives oppose change and adhere to Catholic values, while liberals defend federalism, republicanism, egalitarianism, and equality before the law. As was the case in Europe, Hispanic American liberalism became increasingly secular and anti-clerical. While recognizing that liberalism takes on varying connotations even with Hispanic America, philosopher and historian Mario Posas highlights four characteristics of Hispanic American liberalism, all of which are present in Valle's writings: republicanism, constitutionalism, secularism, and the aspiration of political unity. Republicanism and constitutionalism are intended to limit and delineate political power. Secularism was to curtail the Catholic Church's influence in political affairs and in education. In comparing the political cultures of North and South America, Warda and Klein conclude that it is probably safe to say that although North American political culture is strongly Lockean and liberal, that of Latin American, historically at least, is strongly elitist, hierarchical, authoritarian, corporatist, and patrimonialist. According to these authors, elitism is, in the New World, is the product of Spanish political theory and social tradition, while Catholic tradition accounts for hierarchy and authoritarianism. The old order was not replaced or transformed by the liberal and republican winds that blew in with independence. A new framework of ideas and values, liberal, republican, and egalitarian, sometimes secular and rationalist, was superimposed upon the early traditions, affirmed Guardia and Klein. Poussac concurs with this view. Hispanic American liberalism is tempered by elitism and continental European thought. Given the end of colonial rule, the imported ideal seemed almost imperative. Abate, said Poussac, the liberal aspirations were an official and superficial movement removed from the interests of the majority. Francisco Colom, a researcher with the Spanish National Research Council, believes that the cultural message of individualism never took hold in Spain or in Hispanic America, as the underlying political culture continued to be a strong link with the organic and hierarchical society. One need only scratch the surface of unearth the underlying Catholic culture that traditionally modeled the Hispanic American social imaginaries. Colom refers to the habits, attitudes, and worldview more than direct religious practices. The play between religious and political authority was concerned for Hispanic American liberals. Religious freedom was central to the British colonists and their descendants, probably thanks to the greetings of Locke and Hobbes. The state was not to impose a religion on individuals. In political terms, determining the true creed was not a concern. After independence, in the Southern Hemisphere, many liberal regimes upheld Catholicism as the only legitimate religion, in part out of fear of or as concession to conservatives. The 1824 Central America Constitution was the result of a compromise between liberals and the Catholic Church, and it recognized Catholicism as a state religion. There were, of course, Catholics who sympathized with liberalism, including members of the Church, but lines were drawn in such a way that these figures are cast as historical exceptions. Anticlericalism was imported to Spain from France and then to Hispanic America. The stance had political overtones. Francisco Morazán, for instance, a caudillo who governed the Central American Federation after 1829, implemented anticlerical policies that led to the expulsion of the 8th Archbishop of Guatemala, Ramón Casados y Torres. He also closed all monasteries and canceled all religious community. The most famous liberal regime in Guatemala, established by the caudillo General Justo Rufino Barrios in 1871, expelled the Jesuit order in 1871. Archbishop Joseph Bernardo Piñol was exiled. To diminish the power of the Church, Guatemalans were prohibited for thieving. Barrios' strategy included opening up the country to Protestant missionaries. A Freemason, the liberal president hoped Protestants would help replace the Jesuit education program with a state-run system. In sum, 19th century liberalism in Central America bore similarities and differences with the Anglo-Saxon classical liberalism that reached the United States. The main difference have to do with the state-church relations and the accent placed on individual freedom in economic, social, and political terms. Conclusion, William B. Allen describes a United States identity that is based on individualistic, self-reliant, family-centered, and justice-driven liberty. The anthropological point of departure attributes to the state the role of guarantor of personal liberty, including religious and economic liberties, and provider of justice, presumably through the common law tradition. José Cecilio del Valle writings have less to do with the individual rights than with the state-centered concerns. His emphasis on constitutionalism and republicanism and his dream of a federation united in peace are proof of this. Being a pupil of Bentham, Valle was, of course, interested in personal freedom, as were liberals in Hispanic America during the time. And in justice, United States thinkers, including the Founding Fathers, were quite concerned with the constitutionalism, republicanism, and federalism as well. However, the Hispanic American independence movements were a top-down, constructivist experience. often members of the Criollo elites who had co-governed during the colonial rules, assumed power, imposed independence governments. Guatemala Independence Declaration, for instance, was signed even by top-ranking members of the Catholic Church who had previously been loyal to the Spanish crown. These transitions did not occur in an institutional vacuum devoid of state and rules. There was no frontier for Hispanic America. Remnants of the heavy centralized authority inherited from colonial times were often left in place and merely draped in Republican-sounding outer garments. The fact that many liberal reforms were spread-headed by caudillos revealed a frail commitment to the constitutional protection of individual liberties. Allen's freedom-loving, self-made pioneer is not preoccupied with social or ethnic class distinctions or with formal state-run education models, whereas Valle's liberal vision was contingent on a top-down preparation of citizens through enlightenment-favored education. This education was a necessary prelude, in Valle's view, to a more egalitarian society and a more participative style of government. The identity forget by the frontier logical grant each person the space of, to practice the religion of his or his, her choice. It is a plural conception that was less prevalent in Hispanic America. Unfortunately, the former Hispanic colonists traced a false dichotomy that pitted anticlerical thought against Catholicism as the state sanctioned and through religion. It is a false dichotomy because liberals' ideals can be found in the writings of Catholic priests and authors, such as the members of the scholastic school like Francisco de Vitoria, Juan de Mariana, and Francisco Suarez. And after all, God revealed all created free and rational human beings, not automatons. Liberalism does not come into contradiction with Catholic doctrine, but in 19th century Latin America, liberal politicians often persecuted the church as a manifestation of an organizational power struggle. Allen speaks to the current generation of the United States citizens that lost sight of the frontier identity so that they may recover the love story that has been lost. By analyzing Jose Cecilio del Valle's writings in actions, we conclude that Hispanic America probably never forget a similar narrative of human liberty. Also, perhaps, there may have been intellectuals in the region who discerned this path of to progress. At any rate, they were not influential enough to set the motion and dynamic such as that described by William Allen. His thesis poses interesting questions for Latin America and in the 21st century. Can we tap into our story and intellectual heritage and retrieve a foundation for an ideal of liberty that effectively centers on the individual person? Is there any way in which we can distance ourselves from the tendency to superimpose imported philosophies and policies on pre-existing institutions? Or in other words, can we avoid the adoption of contradictory and cumbersome rule sets that curtail instead of fostering freedom? What conditions need to converge in order that we might experience a frontier that unleashes human creativity and protects liberty, such as the frontiers described by Jackson, Turner, and Allen? Thank you.